All right, I need a few people helping. I'm going to not do all the reading of the scripture today. I have some of you guys. So who could look up Proverbs 19:10 for me? We'll start with Steve. And then I need Proverbs 28:19-22. Shane's got that. And then somebody, Proverbs 21:17. Rich. All right. How about Proverbs 20:13? Adam's got that one. We'll stop there for right now. All right. We looked about last week about how God made gold in the beginning, there in Genesis 2, and even the gold was good of that land. God says wealth is good. Proverbs 8, we looked at how we must obey what God says about acquiring wealth and how to use it, fear Him, be generous, work hard, teach our children. God's way to wealth is generally slow. He warns us about some of the pitfalls of borrowing and so forth. It's a matter of dominion, hierarchy, slavery, and so forth. So many things. Today, I want to look at some of the ways we can throw our money away. Solomon addresses his son, so it's probably very pertinent to young men. But whether we're young or old, whether we're man or woman, we can fall to our appetites or our sensual snares. So Proverbs 13, verse 25.
You said 19.
What did I say?
I don't know. The one I read was that.
Well, can you... 13:25. I'm sorry.
That's right. I heard you wrong, I guess. Okay. The righteous eats to the satisfying of his soul, but the stomach of the wicked shall be in want.
All right. I think I did give you 19:10 also, so you could be ready in a moment. But that's where I want to start, 13:25. The righteous eats to the satisfying of his soul. The stomach of the wicked shall be in want. We can chase after our appetites. We could chase after sensual desires, sensual snares. But they're not going to satisfy, and you are going to probably not be well-to-do. Good desires out of control or sensual snares, they are sinful, but Solomon makes the point they're not only sinful, they're expensive. They're expensive. So whether Solomon talks to us about sleep or sex or many other things, the real issue is God's law honored by how we're doing our affairs, how we're conducting ourselves? So there's numbers of ways that Solomon points out we can just throw away our money, throw away our wealth. Proverbs 19, verse 10, Steve.
Luxury is not fitting for a fool, much less for a servant to rule over princes.
All right, so luxury would be the first one. Luxury is not fitting for a fool. A fool doesn't know how to use things very well. We're going to talk about this in a bit, but people who try to waste their wealth on the lottery, and that one in one, you know, 100 million that wins it, the stories are rather interesting to read of the outcome of those people. How many people can go through a tremendous amount of wealth in no time? People come out of the woodwork who are either related or need money. And then there's always that other story where they get murdered because somebody's after their money. Woo, that's good. All right, so luxury is not fitting for a fool. Let's go on to frivolity. Proverbs 28:19-22.
He who fills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows frivolity will have poverty enough. A faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. To show partiality is not good, because for a piece of bread a man will transgress. A man with an evil eye hastens after riches and does not consider that poverty will come upon him.
All right. So he starts out with frivolity, but Solomon addresses many issues there as well, like getting rich quick, favoritism, or being miserly. But frivolity is mentioned first, referring to following vain pursuits. The right way, it's not glamorous. He who tills his land will have plenty of bread. That sounds boring. But that's the way that God has designed this world, for us to work 6 days, sweat of our brow, rest one day, and he will provide. But then you have those who think they've got a better plan. Like the prodigal son. Why wait? Let me have my inheritance now. And of course, he spent it on frivolity. Harlots, wasteful, prodigious living. And the next thing you know, he's not only feeding the pigs, but he would wish to just eat what the pigs eat. He's so hungry. So we can waste wealth in numerous ways. Young men can waste a weekend on video games. There are men who live in the basement of their parents because they don't have any industry about them, no diligence, and just frivolity, nonsense. And then we mentioned like this, notice twice Solomon mentions these people are trying to get rich quick. Hastens to be rich, verse 20, verse 22, and it ends in poverty. And really, people who go after the lottery usually end up in poverty. They might even win a few, and then they're right back there spending gads of money again, buying more tickets and more, you know. But those are not God's ways. So luxury, pursuing that, frivolity. Let's go to Proverbs 21, verse 17.
He who loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich.
All right. And also, want to read verse 20.
There is a desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it.
All right. The word gluttony is not used in these verses, but it could fall under these headings. Verse 17, he loves pleasure. He that loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich. So he's got something inordinately wrong. Gluttony is mentioned. Well, Jesus was accused of being a glutton, if you remember. But gluttony is not referring to having a healthy plate of food or even getting seconds. That's not gluttony. But a glutton is rather someone who treats food like an alcoholic treats alcohol. All right? Gets drunk on food as a drunkard gets drunk on wine. Pleasure isn't even the problem. Pleasure is not intrinsically evil, but it's the inordinate love of pleasure. He loves wine and oil. He's not going to be rich, you know. But then there's this desirable treasure, verse 20, there is oil in the dwelling of the wise. Well, the wise man is the one who fears God, but a foolish man squanders it. So in the days of Christ, the Romans had the wealthy Romans had a room called the vomitorium. And that was so they could go empty their stomach so they could engorge, not just on seconds, but engorge on the whole another luxurious dinner. And pretty gross, but that's what man does when they're serving the belly versus serving the true God. So you can blow your money on inordinate pleasures, things out of order. Sleep can also bring poverty. Proverbs 20, verse 13.
Love not sleep, lest you come to poverty. Open your eyes, and you will have plenty of bread.
And it's not just simply, okay, my eyes are open, but I'm still in bed. It means get up and do something, right? I love Solomon on the sleep issues. There's the sluggard who's like the, you know, a door has a hinge so he can open, but he's like a hinge on the bed. He just moves back and forth. He never gets out of the bed for various reasons. Oh, it's cold outside. It's windy. Oh, there's a lion in the street. He's got all the reasons why he can't get out of bed. Well, you don't get out of bed, and you're not going to be acquiring wealth. That's for sure. Is sleep good to have? Yeah, sleep's a gift of God. An inordinate love of sleep is going to make you lazy, make you a sluggard, make you slothful. I remember learning this as a child. Ben Franklin, you know, the farmer, Ben Franklin's whatever it was, I forget. Yeah, his almanac, but this statement, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. There's wisdom in that. And whether Franklin believed in the Lord or not, that truth is basically poured throughout Proverbs. Early to bed. Let's just digress a moment. Turn to Psalm 104. Psalm 104. God even lays down a general pattern for us about when we should go to bed and when we should get out of bed. Psalm 104, verse 19. God appointed the moon for seasons. The sun, get this, the sun knows it's going down. It doesn't say the sun knows it's got to go down. The sun knows when to go down is basically the idea, all right? It's funny because some people don't know when to go down and sleep. All right, but the sun knows it's going down. You make darkness and it is night in which all the beasts of the forest creep about. The young lions roar after their prey. They seek their food from God. When the sun rises, those beasts gather together and lie down in their dens. Man goes out to his work and to his labor until the evening. And it wasn't the day that, you know, farmers would go to bed when the chickens roost. Farmers go to bed when the sun knows it's going down. It's not just the beasts of the forest that creep about in the darkness. It's the other creeps, too. Right? One popular radio commentator says often, no good thing happens, you know, in those hours, midnight, too. You know, the bars are open to what, too? No good thing happens in those hours. So we should know our going down. We should know if you get to bed early, you'll be able to get up early and make something. Make something of your life. Be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Obviously, sex is a way a young man can throw away his wealth, or any person. But Solomon gives his son incredible warnings in the first seven chapters. Let's just read a couple of those. Proverbs 5, 8 through 10. Remove your way far from her, talking about a strange woman. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. Lest aliens, strangers, be filled with your wealth, and your labors go to the house of a foreigner, and you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. There's all kinds of bad things that are going to happen to you in pursuing sex in an inordinate way. And one of them is it's going to bring you to poverty. It's going to cost you. It'll cost you your health, wealth, livelihood, all kinds of things. That would include pornography and so forth. Now, in the Old King James, I don't remember all what the word is here in this translation, New King James, but it uses the phrase strange woman. Don't go to the strange woman. Do you know who is a strange woman? I heard a teacher say, a strange woman is anyone that's not your wife, your mother, or your sister or daughter. In other words, you're supposed to be dedicated, if you're married to your wife, if you're a father, you protect your daughters and so forth. But it's not, obviously it includes the prostitute, but any woman would be strange. You're supposed to have that kind of a strangeness about you that you don't get entangled in these affairs. So that's another way you can throw wealth away. Dishonesty. Did I give anybody Proverbs 20 verse 10? Let's go there together. Proverbs 20 verse 10. Diverse or different weights and diverse measures, they are both alike an abomination to the Lord. That's Proverbs 20, verse 10. Oh, by the way, if you didn't hear that, look at Proverbs 20, verse 23. Diverse weights are an abomination to Yahweh, to the Lord, and dishonest scales are not good. There's a reason we have a Bureau of Weights and Measures, all right? Because there's certain, and that comes right out of biblical law. You see the little stickers on the gas pumps. You don't want to go think you're buying, you know, 10 gallons of gas and be getting 8.5 and paying the price for 10. Or in the day you didn't want to go to the butcher and think you were buying a pound of ground beef, but the butcher had his thumb on the scale and you're actually getting a, you know, half a pound or something. So, but notice what Solomon says in both verses, 20 verse 10 and 20 verse 23. Diverse weights are what? An abomination to Yahweh. Now here's some other things that the scripture says are an abomination to the Lord. Leviticus 18:22, sodomy is an abomination to the Lord. Deuteronomy 7 verse 25, idolatry is an abomination to the Lord. Deuteronomy 18 verse 12, witchcraft is an abomination to the Lord. Proverbs 11 verse 8 tells us a dishonest man is a wicked man. And here we are told that this being dishonest and weights and measures and so forth is an abomination to the Lord. That would classify this as something pretty hateful in God's eyes, being dishonest. And dishonesty can come about in many ways, like in Proverbs 27, 1 through 2, we could be dishonest when we boast about tomorrow. James said, don't you be boasting, you rich men, about tomorrow. You don't know what a day may bring. Dishonesty could be not completing your work on time. You said, I'll get it done, and you don't get it done. That's dishonest. Or, you promise you'll do this work and you use these kind of goods, but if you don't deliver on the quality that was promised, that's dishonest. Or maybe you've contracted with somebody to do work for you and they do it, but then you don't pay right away on time. You don't pay when the work's done. That's dishonest. Dishonesty frequently brags about what they will do. Proverbs 25, verse 14. A lot of people can make a good talk. I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll be here this time, I'll get that done. And they don't do it, that's dishonest. We should be people of our word, have integrity. Dishonesty is often learned first at the home. Look at Proverbs 28, verse 24. Proverbs 28, verse 24. Whoever robs his father or his mother and says, it's no transgression. The same as companion to a destroyer. Now what Solomon doesn't tell us is, where's dad and mom in this whole picture? Why is the kid going off thinking, that's no big deal? Well, often, parents can excuse it. And if you're excusing it, you're leading a child down the wrong way if they're being dishonest. And so you want to deal with that properly, according to God's word. Train your children to be honest. So those are some ways we can waste or throw away our wealth that God says is good and would delight to prosper us. And then there's a lot of the practical things. And before I mention some of those, I want to recommend a couple books. I failed to check to see if any of these are still in print. How many are familiar with Vic Lachman? All right, Vic Lachman, he's a cartoonist, Christian cartoonist. He was part of the Reconstruction crowd. He does the shorter catechism in comics. He has some great little books on last times, postmillennial. This one is Biblical Economics in Comics by Vic Lachman. This is a great one to get if you can still find a copy or if it's in print, and use it with children. I like reading it myself, but it's full of truth, but it's done in illustrations of comics on economics. This one is Making Sense of Your Dollars by Ian Hodge, an Australian man, and I believe I purchased this through Kel Seed, and that would be Rush Dooney's ministry. But if you can find this one, Making Sense of Your Dollars by Ian Hodge, it's good sound theology. Rush Dooney does have a preface in here. He says, you know, a lot of Christians just frankly don't read on economics. And we should. And we should be knowledgeable about that. And he goes through the scriptures and deals with all kinds of issues, including the practical. Besides, you know, the theology of wealth and so forth, and age of envy and biblical view of wealth. But he goes and talks about taxes and inflation and debt, alternatives to debt. insurance, faith in insurance, how wealth is created, how wealth is preserved, and so forth. So if you can get a copy of that, I'd recommend it. When we were a young married couple, I remember hearing Larry Burkett on the Christian radio station. Anybody familiar with Larry Burkett? Today, the guru is Dave Ramsey, but I kind of grew up with Larry Burkett. And I remember Larry Burkett saying two things repeatedly on his radio program. He says, I never knew anyone who paid their house off that regretted it later. And I kept hearing that and kept hearing that and kept hearing that. And eventually, we were in our second house, and that's another story, but came to the conclusion, why don't we try and pay off our house? And talked with Sandy about it, and we agreed to do that. It didn't take much time. We didn't have a huge mortgage, but it didn't take much time, even on a one income that wasn't great, to pay off a house. And I've never, ever, ever, ever regretted paying off my house. But the wisdom of the day, and I don't know, it's probably still the wisdom of financial counselors today, but the wisdom is, oh, no, don't pay off your house. You can use the interest payments as a tax deduction. By the way, Ian Hodge blows that one away in this book. Larry Burkett did. I don't remember what Dave Ramsey says about it, but we shouldn't be gearing our finances because of what taxes we might pay or might not pay. We should rather understand debt, what it does to us, and so forth. So that was one thing Larry said. It influenced our family, our experience, and I've never regretted paying off a house. Another thing he said was about credit cards. Larry Burkett emphasized, you use a credit card, there's nothing wrong to use a credit card, but you make sure you pay off the balance in full every month. And the first month, you don't pay off the balance in full, you heat the oven to 350, you grease a cookie sheet, you put the card on the cookie sheet, and you stick it in the oven. You're not fit to use a credit card. Because what is the interest rates on credit cards? 28? I don't know where they're at right now, but you go into poverty quick trying to pay off credit cards. Those are the kind of practical things we need to apply when we think about the whole idea of wealth. Another one is, this is a favorite word for a lot of people, and I have tongue in cheek here, is budgeting. I am a budget. Now, I think it was our first year of marriage at Christmas, my kid sister gave us a budgeting book. I can still picture this blue budgeting book from Dome Publishing. And I go, oh, this sounds interesting. I like this whole idea. I will warn you that you can use a budget and it can be a real onerous, tyrannical thing, or it can be very helpful. So I got this budgeting book and I started budgeting, and I wanted to account for, and I'm not exaggerating, every penny. I'll tell you, that doesn't do well for your marriage, okay? We didn't have good conversations about pennies. So you can kill the whole purpose of a budget by being too exacting. I like how Ian Hodge makes the point. He says, he has this phrase, no budget, which, wait a minute. But he's saying keep it real simple. I think Samuel made the comment last week. I taught the kids, you always pay God first. You bring the first fruits, the 10%, the tithe, to the house of the Lord when you make something. And the second thing is you pay yourself. You set aside for savings for a future, not something I'm going to use next week, but you set aside that you're not going to touch. We've learned we need to be generous. We need to live within our means. So once you've tithed and once you've paid yourself in a way that you're not going to go take from yourself, you're saving for the future, then you can use the rest however you need to, for the food, the housing, the clothes, whatever. But once that's gone, you don't spend any more. So that's a real simple budget that we all ought to be doing. And accountability and budgeting is actually a biblical concept we see illustrated in the days of Ezra. He was going to go back to the land. He was entrusted to go back to the land so they could rebuild the temple Nehemiah was entrusted to rebuild the wall. And all this gold and silver and all this wealth was entrusted to Ezra. So they took a good accounting of it before they went on the trip. And when they got over back to the old homeland, they did another accounting of it to make sure it was all there. So there's no thievery or anything going on. And so we should know well the condition of our flocks, the proverb says. We should be those who take good care and accounting of our assets that God blesses us with. When our kids... Well, let me back up. We should be teaching our children these things. In a family, we should all be pulling together as a unit, so there are chores. And I didn't believe in paying children for chores. Those are just things we all do for cleaning, upkeep, and so forth. But then we encouraged our children when they were able to get a job. I know this may sound strange nowadays, but you know, they carried newspapers and delivered. We don't do that nowadays. But they all had paper routes, more or less. And then they'd get jobs at wherever, custard stand, bakery, whatever. And I always put them on a budget. And I also held them accountable to the budget when they were young. They always paid God first. They always paid themselves second. So they always gave the 10% of their $30 paper route. And then they were required to put 50% away for the long term. Because as kids, they don't have all the expenses that a parent has. And they need to learn to save because they're going to be big expenses. And then they had to have some set aside for generosity, for giving gifts to their siblings or whatever. And then I also made them save a little bit for clothing. You say, oh, you tyrant? No, I wanted to learn they live in a real world. There are expenses that are coming down the pike. They didn't have to buy all their clothes, but they had to set a little aside so that they would learn the reality. And then the rest they could spend. Which wasn't a lot, but they didn't need to learn to consume as much as produce and save. We need to teach our kids those things. And if we do, we'll be learning wisdom. And again, God's way to wealth is slow, but every one of the kids, and I'm not bragging here, but every one of the kids bought their own car, their first car. And ever since, I didn't buy their car. They paid for their own insurance. Why did they have the money to do that? Well, because they had jobs, they learned to work, they learned to save, they learned to trust God's way, and they were able to buy vehicles and so forth. So these are things we should be teaching our kids as well as practicing in our own lives. I want to ask for questions, but before I do, and we're at the bewitching hour, I want us to open our red notebook. Because next week we have a new song of the month. It's page 13.